It's called modern day slavery, and it's real. Today, we're talking about human trafficking. Hello, and welcome to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report. Today, I'm joined by Matt Joy from the Department of Justice. He is the Bureau Director of the Wisconsin Human Trafficking Area. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Can you start by defining what is human trafficking?
Sure. So typically I take the approach, because I do work in an enforcement criminal investigative capacity, that the sort of definition of human trafficking that I typically rely on is the definition as provided in state statute.
Okay. What does that mean?
Well, so it's a crime. Human trafficking is a crime defined by state statute. There is a human trafficking crime. There is a trafficking of a child crime. And the statute provides the elements of that crime. So we can use that to help us define the crime. I will say that, I've worked at the Department of Justice for about 20 years. The last year and a half, I have been more involved in human trafficking in the investigative and enforcement side. And I will say that human trafficking is, it's a horrific crime. And I do appreciate your attention to this and the conversation. I think it's very important that folks know that this is real, this is happening. And so I appreciate that. But the definition of human trafficking is essentially there's an act, a means, and a purpose. So the act is recruiting, enticing, harboring, transporting, obtaining, or attempting to a person for the purpose of labor or commercial sex act. Traditionally, when people think of a commercial sex act, they think of sex in exchange for, typically money. And then the means by which this is facilitated is through access to drugs, or through drug addiction, through extortion, fraud, threats of harm, and so that's the face of human trafficking that many folks don't see or aren't aware of. And I should say too that element of the crime is not necessary for trafficking of a child, so someone under the age of 18. What does it look like to most folks, or what do most folks think of when they hear human trafficking or, sex trafficking? They think of a person in a hotel who is, there's an exchange of a good, so money for sex, typically. Prostitution is what people think of, most frequently. And so it's more than that. There is the side of trafficking that people don't think of or don't just aren't aware of, the force, fraud, coercion, the extortion, the physical harm, the exposure to violence, that side of it. And so that's why it's so important that we let people know that this is real and this is happening, and I appreciate that there's so much attention to this issue right now.
On your website, you have a form that talks about the different parts of human trafficking. And one of the things that you specifically talked about that I found interesting was you defined smuggling versus trafficking. Can you talk a little bit about what is the difference between smuggling and trafficking?
Sure. Yeah, I that's a good point. I think there are folks that believe that... how do I say this? So smuggling is more the movement of people. So, transporting or facilitating the transportation of a person from point A to point B. And I think the thing that most people sort of commonly associate with this is movement of someone from South America or Central America into the United States through tunnels, through, in the back of a van or a truck or in the trunk of a car. So the movement of people, that's smuggling. That is not trafficking. Now, certainly there could be a trafficking nexus. associated with the movement of people, for labor or even commercial sex. But there is a difference. So smuggling is the movement of people, covertly, getting them from point A to point B, whereas trafficking involves, as I had mentioned earlier, the act, the means, the purpose, the force, fraud, coercion, those kinds of things. So there's a difference.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about human trafficking and its impact on Wisconsin.
The Wisconsin Counties Association represents Wisconsin's 72 counties at both the state and federal level. Learn more about how counties impact your community at wicounties.org.
Welcome back to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report, and I'm joined today by DOJ Matt Joy, the Wisconsin Human Trafficking Bureau Director. So I've done some stories in the past and explained that human trafficking occurs in all 72 counties, whether people are aware of the fact that it's in their county or not. So what role does local government play in helping fight human trafficking or in awareness of human trafficking?
So that is a great point, and it's important for your audience to recognize that human trafficking does happen, can happen anywhere. And so I think we'll talk perhaps later in the program about some of the things to look for, but I think that's the first step, is having a recognition that this can happen anywhere, and so opening people's eyes and minds to that so that they would appreciate when they see things that look out of order, that they can make that connection that it could be trafficking related. So that's a great point. So I work within the Division of Criminal Investigation within the Wisconsin Department of Justice, and we've really worked a lot over the last year and a half to build our partnerships with certainly local law enforcement, education, not only for detectives and investigators, but certainly for patrol. The Wisconsin State Patrol has really taken a leadership role in this effort as well. But really, getting the education out to our law enforcement partners about what this can look like, because our patrol officers across the state are, coming in contact with literally tens, hundreds of thousands of people every year, and understanding, indicators, signs, what to look for, being cognizant of trafficking issues to ask the right questions is very important. There are a lot of, I'll call them human trafficking task forces, advocacy groups that have started to grow and develop within Wisconsin over the last year, 2 years, to help educate folks in their communities about this issue. And so helping those groups with educational materials. If I could plug the website, BeFreeWisconsin.com. BeFreeWisconsin.com is the link to the Wisconsin Department of Justice human trafficking page, where there's lots of resources for folks who want to have access to more information. But also working, getting back to your question, working with local social services, child welfare, and advocacy groups, to make sure that people who are within the system are that those indicators are there, that folks who work in those systems, in those communities, if you will, understand this crime, these indicators, and can put people in touch with the right resources to keep moving forward.
So one of the things that I recently read or have been reading more about is the age 13. The age 13 is a key number in human trafficking because it's generally when many people start being trafficked. Can you talk a little bit about how that starts at that age?
Yeah, that is a great question. And many of the folks who have been victims, who are survivors of trafficking, tell us or report that they first entered into their situations at a very young age. And I think that is one of the things that really surprises people.
Right, 13, we're talking middle school kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so traffickers are very good at finding vulnerabilities or preying on vulnerabilities, and for those of us who have experiences with 13-year-old children, that's a tough age. And getting to know yourself and maybe, you know, mom or dad or your guardian kind of coming into your own and maybe having some, maybe there's some defiance there or trying to, you know, learn sort of, you know, what you're about as a person and wanting to experience new things. So there's just developmentally in our brains at that age, you know, traffickers are very skilled at preying upon, grooming, you know, using people's fears and, you know, are wanting to sort of be rebellious and a whole host of other things that kind of play into that age. And
so are there a group of people that are more vulnerable to human trafficking?
I would say that, as I kind of alluded to, these traffickers are very skilled at preying upon people, finding their, I'll just say, things that are issues in their life and trying to build them up, pull them away from loved ones, give them a new life, new opportunities, make things, you know, seem better with the trafficker. And so this can happen in person, you know, and that's why we've done some targeted training with, you know, malls and mall security, schools, places where children are, or online. And so that's why we really work hard to continue educating folks about online issues. And so, you know, no social media platform is immune from traffickers. And so it's important that, you know, that parents work with their children to build levels of communication where you can talk about these issues. So it runs the gamut.
So two books that I read when my children were small were The Gift of Fear and Protecting the Gift, both about using your general intuition to protect your children and being able to open your eyes to the real vulnerabilities of your children as they're out in public. So let's not talk about the victims as much, but what about the traffickers? What kinds of people are you looking for? You know, when I read these two books, it opened my eyes to the people who approach you in public are different kinds of people, and what should you be looking for? What shouldn't you be looking for? When you're out in public and you're a teenage girl or you're a woman or you're somebody who is vulnerable to human trafficking, what kinds of things should you be looking for? What does grooming look like?
Yeah, that's another great question, Glenn. Typically, traffickers are very confident. They're very skilled communicators. They put you at ease. They make you feel comfortable. Obviously, talking to someone either in person or online who you don't know is extremely dangerous. I mean, that's the reality of the world we live in. But yeah, extremely, I mean, to think about sort of the things, you know, the violence, the access or use of or involvement with drugs, you know, trafficking people. It's I mean, almost inconceivable that we human beings can do this to one another. But there are people who, you know, as I said, they're just the confidence, the ability to communicate, just the level of brazenness, and to approach someone and, you know, a perfect stranger, or I should say too, and step back, that, you know, we do see familial trafficking. So that's not, you know, that's not something we don't see. Let's put it that way. So where it's someone who is known to the victim. But, yeah, it's, I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Is it familiar? I mean, how do you define it when it's maybe not a family member who's trafficking, but somebody who's been close to the family, who has groomed the family for a long time and had access to these children, and then suddenly the children becomes a victim?
Yeah, and that's one of the, you know, we talk about, you know, indicators or things to look for, you know, happening sort of, you know, right in front of you, if you will. And so, using things like love and perceived love and affection and attention to build a relationship such that the victim of this crime doesn't feel like they're being victimized. Rather, that's the relationship that they have with this particular person. And maybe that's not the kind of relationship that many other people have. But in their mind, their eyes, it's a relationship that, you know, they feel like they've chosen. They feel like they've been, you know, sort of tricked into feeling like this is normal, natural, and this is our kind of a relationship, and this is how, you know, we express love for one another and trust for one another. And so building that kind of a bond where, you know, other loved ones, there's no perception that this is something that's even possible or could be happening.
All right, well, stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk more about victims.
The League of Wisconsin Municipalities advocates for Wisconsin's 600 cities and villages, speaking up for local democracy and common-sense citizen-led government. Learn more at lwm-info.org.
You're listening to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report, and today's guest is Wisconsin Human Trafficking Bureau Director Matt Joy. So I want to talk more about the victims. Once they are found, what is the next step for victims? I mean, I can imagine that somebody who's been trafficked for a very long time, it's a whole new learning process.
Right. It's a sort of new normal, if you will. And I've had the opportunity to hear from many survivors of human trafficking, and it's a tough road. It really is. I can't comprehend what that would be like, having been in that situation. You know, a person having been in that situation, experiencing, as I've mentioned before, you know, violence, drug use, drug addiction, other kinds of relationships with people. Many victims of human trafficking have had what we call system exposure. So medical, social services, law enforcement. And so they've been in contact, theoretically, with folks who could have helped them and
didn't know.
And they didn't get that help. Nobody asked that question. And so there's oftentimes distrust of folks in the system, if you will. So building up those relationships, providing access to, you know, educational opportunities and, workplace opportunities and things of that sort. It gets back to your question about, you know, working with local communities. And are there things that the communities can do to help provide access to that education, you know, the work skills development, even household, you know, management, budget, and these kinds of things that perhaps they haven't had an opportunity to do. So it takes a community to help folks, survivors of trafficking, and so it's very important.
So when we talk about, you know, these are people who have come in contact with the system or people who have been out in public and they're seen, and what should somebody look for? I mean, what are signs that something's not right? What should I, as an average citizen, when I'm somewhere, be cognizant of?
One of the things that, how do I put this? Maybe just me, maybe I'll personalize this, that I'm not as good at is, and I'll use a kind of a story from something that happened with me yesterday, actually, with my son. I have an 11-year-old son, and there was we were out shopping, and there was kind of a bit of a commotion. I could hear two people sort of arguing, and my son stopped what he was doing, and he started staring. He was watching. And you look around, and most of the adults who are in the area just sort of go about their business. Don't pay attention. It's not our issue. It's somebody else's problem. Move along, kind of thing. But my son stopped, watched, and I think that's something that children are very good at, is when something's happening, they, you know, stop and stare. And many people would say, no, that's rude. You know, don't stop, don't stare. It's not your business. But I'm advocating for people to stop and stare. It's our business. This is something that impacts our communities. And as I mentioned before, it's a horrific, it's horrific. And so, yeah, things to look for, and this is something we're getting better at in law enforcement, is historically, we law enforcement, and I'll, you know, point inward, we would see domestic violence, we would see loud noise complaints, we would see drug possession calls at face value. This is a domestic, this is a loud noise complaint, this is, you know, a drug issue. And we never took a step back to think, could this be an indicator, or is this something else? And so what I would suggest to people is ask those questions and realize that human trafficking looks like different things. So especially related to a child, let's just say having money, having, you know, getting, you know, nails done and wearing makeup, and runaways. I'm very concerned about children who are, I shouldn't say runaway, I should say missing. That's better, more appropriate probably language. Missing children, why are they missing? Where are they? Telephones, prepaid gift card kinds of things, hotel key cards, drug use, tattoos can be an indicator. Young people spending time with adults or older people, that, you know, that just seems kind of inconsistent with, you know, what would be appropriate or normal. Marks, so, you know, having been hit or punched or slapped or exposed to other kinds of things that would leave marks on people.
So if I recognize these signs, if I'm out in public shopping at the mall with my daughter and I see something that doesn't look right to me, clearly I shouldn't intervene. I know that's one thing that has been highly emphasized, is that I should not get involved personally, but I should contact law enforcement.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Call your local law enforcement. Let them know what you're seeing, and someone can respond to that location to make an assessment as to what's happening.
But what do you say to, you know, the average person who says, this isn't my business, and what if I'm wrong?
It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to be wrong. We'd rather know what's happening. We'd rather have a chance to assess the information, and make a determination of what's happening in that situation or in that relationship. So that's one way. You know, report to local law enforcement. It can be situational dependent. So if you sort of see you're in the middle of something, and you can call local law enforcement, that's great. That's the best first step. You know, there are other steps. There's the National Human Trafficking Hotline. You know, if you see something, you report a license plate or, you know, clothing description, location. If you, you know, became aware of something, or online, if you see things online, grooming behaviors, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC, through their cyber tip line. That's another place where you can report online profiles, screen names, email addresses, etc. If you see things that look out of place, I would highly recommend folks do that as well.
So any final thoughts, anything that I missed or anything really important that you think people should know?
No, I mean, so we're trying to take kind of a three-prong approach, if you will. Obviously, resources for victims and survivors, targeting or investigating traffickers. And then the third element that is something we're doing more with is the demand side, demand suppression. And so focusing on, this is primarily related to sex trafficking, but buyers of sex. And so using that three-prong approach to targeting this issue, this crime, through victim recovery, helping and working with victims and survivors, focusing on those who traffic, and then also focusing on buyers of sex.
All right. I'm going to have you give us the website one more time where people can go.
BeFree, so that's BeFree, F-R-E-E, Wisconsin.com.
And is Wisconsin spelled out or is it just W-I?
It's spelled out.
Okay, perfect. Well, that's the end of today's podcast. Thank you so much for coming. I think this has been very helpful. For additional information or links that we specifically talked about, I will make sure that those are available in the blog post for the podcast, and people can go to www.thewheelerreport.com and check out those podcast details. I want to thank our partners in community radio, Rice Lake Radio 105.5 FM, Wapaka Radio 96.3 FM, Sun Prairie Radio 103.5 FM, and Oshkosh Radio 101.9 FM. Thank you to the League of Wisconsin Municipalities and the Wisconsin Counties Association for partnering with me on this podcast. And thanks to Jackie Johnson for doing our sound editing.